Welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley. That dude. Coming up, we'll get into this week's matchup between Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers.
And if Derrick Rose is really back, like finally back after last night's 50-point game, but we start every day with a Whitlock. What you got today, big dog?
In anticipation of tonight's Raiders 49ers clash, Raiders legend Howie Long sat down for an exclusive interview with Raiders head coach John Gruden. The interview is candid, fascinating, and enlightening. Howie's gravitas as a broadcaster and Oakland Hall of Famer allowed him to probe Gruden in a unique way. Part one of the interview will air tonight on Fox before kickoff, and part two on Sunday's NFL pregame show. Here are a couple of excerpts that are interesting.
I ain't packing nothing in. You know, we ain't packing anything in. We're working as hard as we have ever worked. Someone makes a phone call to you in the middle of the night and makes you an offer that you think helps this franchise, the Raiders. Mm-hmm. You make that move. I got a cell phone just like you and everybody else. Right. And I get a lot of phone calls from people that are dying to come and play here. I'm just telling you, they're dying to play for the Raiders.
That was Chucky, not John Gruden. The Raiders. Everybody's calling me to play for the Raiders. Raiders owner Mark Davis hired John Gruden to play the role of Chucky for 2 years while the team transitions from Oakland to Las Vegas. Davis has agreed to pay Gruden $100 million for the role of distracting attention away from the fact Davis isn't planning to spend any real money until the team moves into its new revenue-generating stadium. Marcellus thinks that's a horrible deal. But acting isn't a cheap profession. Keanu Reeves was paid $126 million for The Matrix Reloaded. Mm. Bruce Willis received $120 million for The Sixth Sense. And Tom Cruise got $100 mil for The War of the Worlds.
Lord.
In order to earn his $100 million, Gruden is going to have to do far more than Reeves, Willis, and Cruise. Gruden has to play Chucky for this season and next, and then become John Gruden again for another 8 years. That's a lot of work. And it may be an impossible task. I'm not sure Gruden is ever going to recover from this Chucky routine. This Gruden-Chucky experiment isn't going to have some kind of happy ending like Sybil. Y'all remember Sybil? It was a famous book and 1976 miniseries on NBC. Sybil was a grown woman who had multiple personalities, including a childlike girl named Peggy who scared the hell out of Sybil. At the end of the miniseries, a psychiatrist hypnotizes Sybil and introduces her to Peggy. Somehow, Peggy and Sybil hug, and it cures Sybil, and Sybil goes on to live a normal life. When the Raiders finally move to Las Vegas, I guarantee you Mark Davis plans on hypnotizing Gruden, taking him to a strip club or massage parlor,
hello,
and introducing him to Chucky. But it's gonna be too late. This whole Chucky character is ruining Gruden's reputation inside locker rooms. Chucky works on TV, but it's a clown show with players. Sitting on TV at 1-6 and bragging about how everybody wants to play for the Raiders. That's Chris Berman and Frank Caliendo's stick, not the stick of a head football coach. Gruden has bought the Chucky hype. Players won't. All right, joining the desk now are Fox NFL analyst Greg Jennings, former NFL star Sean Merriman, and of course, Marcellus, we'll start with you.
Yeah.
Gruden right now is more shtick than head football coach.
I just got to get this out the way. You're not going to be the only one up here having fun.
The Raiders.
Who didn't grow up wanting to get on this desk right here?
The Raiders.
And we all owe Chris Berman some money. I don't know what. Being real and answering this question, this dude, John Gruden, man, his entertainment value is coming at a cost, which is going to lose this locker room. The benefit of losing this locker room is that he's intentionally trying to get rid of this same locker room. So guess what? That collegiate experience of every 4 years, hey, man, this message doesn't get old because you guys are gone. Whether you go to the next level, you go somewhere else, whatever it may be, it won't become white noise. So John Gruden doing it this way, being Chucky on the freeway all the way to Las Vegas, will work. But let's talk about what John Gruden didn't expect. He didn't expect to come out the booth, that $10 million a year air-conditioned booth, and then get on a team and only coach them to one win. This was not as expected, but He's now in a place where he's going back to old reliable. And human nature for all of us, when we get caught up in a crunch, in a bind, we all go to old reliable. And what is old reliable to him? This is the comedian who comes out with his second album. And the first album was, oh my God, did you see how funny he was? And then he gets up there and his second tour around, he starts to tell them jokes. And them jokes ain't funny. And he starts looking at Eighth Row and them people ain't laughing. And then people start leaving. And you know what he goes back to? Old material. And what is the old material for John Gruden? The Raiders and all that Chucky stuff. So I understand what he's doing. And I think it will have a day when it's going to be winning football, but just not yet.
We're watching this thing crash and burn, like, right in front of us. You know, one of the things that I always was said about Gruden a long time ago, if you ask any of them Tampa Bay guys that were down there, is that he's not real. He's not trustworthy. What he's doing right now in front of us is almost, like you said, it's almost comedy, because we've already seen this before. We knew that this was going to happen. He didn't know that they were going to start off 1-6, but we knew and the players knew, because if you go back to them Tampa Bay teams, when they say, hey, you gotta watch this guy. He'll tell you one thing, do something else. And this is not just a few players. This is a lot of players will tell you the same thing. This was what's bad about it. They're already trading away all this future stuff, and they're trading away and getting guys in, and they're I'm not going to say they're tanking, but they are. These guys still have to show up every single day to practice, knowing that I might not be a part of this organization in the future. That word travel, just like we all talked in the locker room, that word travels to the other guys. Hey, man, you gotta watch. So the new guys now, the rookies, and all the new players that he's having coming in that locker room are already put on notice. That's one thing he has to worry about. And I don't care if he's going to sell tickets or not. I don't care if he's going to make this transition. Players talk. We talk to each other. And if that word gets out to a younger rookie or new guy walking in that locker room that, hey, man, you got to watch this guy because he'll tell you this and he'll go right behind your back and go back to the owner and say this. That's where the problem's going to be.
Absolutely right. That's the problem. Players talk. And when I listen to John Gruden, he sounds like a salesman in a dealership.
A used car
salesman that's telling you that this is all good.
They don't say used.
Old Civic.
Civic. Even with a new car. And then you go months later after having that car and you go to the service department and you wonder why your wheels are worn down and all. Man, these cars are terrible with this. And this, you never hear any of that out front. All these guys, Jordy Nelson, all these guys that he brought on expecting to do something special this year, they were lied to. They didn't expect and anticipate going through something like this. And quite frankly, I don't think John Gruden expected this. I think he thought it was going to be a lot different, a lot more who I am and what I do is going to be enough, and it don't cut it anymore. Yep. And truth is everything. When you in a locker room, I don't want to hear all that phony stuff. I don't want to – when we watch that, we looking at it like, man, get that out of here.
Yeah.
In the locker room, you think these guys aren't saying the same thing?
Well, y'all stop – both of y'all acting like if you guys were still active players, because y'all sounding real comfortable up here. I don't want to hear that. I ain't playing for that. If this same guy and this stick is in Vegas, are you not signing up for that? I know I am. If I'm a free agent, if I'm out there balling, you know why? Who doesn't want to be the toast of the town in Las Vegas?
That's the only thing. That's the only difference.
Wait.
That's the big difference.
Whoa. Love Vegas. I'm there more than almost everybody but Sean.
yeah, you're right. Merriman up there.
I got everybody beat up there.
But Vegas does not cover up losing.
Never.
We don't know that answer because Vegas has never had a football team. Two, if they may just be happy in embracing football, king of all sports in their town. And Mr. Green Bay and Mr. Buffalo like me signing them. People going to take this the wrong way. We used to Big Five or, you know, Dick's Sporting Goods. Hey, come down on Tuesday. We got Greg Jennings for $10,000. And you up there signing them autographs. You go to Vegas, and them whales are flying in on them private jets, and I'm in that back room casino signing something.
It's
a whole different animal. And Gruden knows that. He doesn't have to sell a thing. He has to sell in Oakland. Once he gets to Vegas, he just has to be.
You got to win regardless. You have... to make people, man, you know how hard this game is?
No one wins in Vegas. No one is winning in Vegas, and they still are fine.
But see, that's the thing, though. People, when they're talking about tanking, right, like, you think the guy's going to, you think they're tanking for future. It's hard to tank in football because it's too much of a physical demanding sport.
Oh, yeah.
In basketball and some other sports, you maybe can tank because it's not as hard on your body. If you decide to tank on football, if you coming into practice and you don't feel like being there and you don't feel like playing in the game, you risk injury. Because that guy across from you, he don't care whether y'all 1-6 or 6-1. He don't care what you are. So if you go with that attitude that you're okay with tanking and you're not going to put 100% into this game, you risk injury. So it's different than anything else. You can't tank in this sport.
For me, I agree with some of what you said.
Oh, now we're talking.
No. Okay. I agree with some of what you said.
That back room of the sign there, guys.
I think that will entice a lot of young guys to come over there and say, you know what, I'll put up with this. Yeah, because they think they have so much more career left. But when you talk about selling guys in that locker room already know what he's done. Mm-hmm. So they're going to come too. And they're going to talk to all these other guys that are trying to come. And then it's going to be problematic because now you're talking about, am I willing to come over here because of contract? Because your contract, we clearly see it means nothing.
Yeah.
We can rip that up and throw that out the
Players
window and
talk.
You out.
But money talks.
Yeah, but hold on.
And let's be real about that. The opportunity is going to be
But money can get taken away from you.
Let me ask you, how many times have you pulled over a young player, right, a young guy that came in the league, and you seen a coach teaching him a certain way or saying a certain thing to him, and you pulled him over to the side and said, hey, I heard what he just said. Watch out for this, though.
Yeah, always.
I've said that before.
Always.
Because either you've heard something about a coach or how they operate or how they do things behind the scenes, and you're just trying to take care of that young guy. So if you bring a guy in there that's a 6-7-8-year vet that's already got word or got some kind of background
some
on John
intel,
Gruden and
yeah.
how he operates, you're going to take that rookie and say, hey, man, I know he just said it, to watch out.
I would say be careful of saying you can't take an NFL because you can, but it's a different motivation. You can put players in the worst position possible. You can construct a roster that is not to succeed, and then that's tanking. To us, we're going to go out there and run through the wall regardless
wrong
of where
system.
You put us.
You can put the wrong system.
Wrong
in.
System. Low. Hey, I'm going to hit my tight end every play to the point where we throw interceptions and not my wide receiver mm-hmm. and then trade him because he's not getting production.
But Marcellus, my point is you know what it's like to wake up on a Monday or a Tuesday after playing an NFL game, and it takes you 2 or 3 days to recover. Mm. And it does. If you land in Las Vegas or Green Bay, Wisconsin, the only thing that justifies that is the hope. Are we building towards a championship or some sort of success that justifies this? And if the word is out like, man, John Gruden can't really help us win, it's more shtick. It's about this money and it's about this character and role he's playing and you can't trust him. Man, these guys got enough money. They can go visit Vegas enough
True.
That they don't need to be lived there. Yep. And again, and particularly any player that's married, his wife, his significant other, is like, they not really feeling Vegas. That's a whole different sales job at home. And there's a lot of successful married players in the league. They not all single running wild like Sean Merriman.
Say it, brother.
Hey.
Whitlock and Wiley, time for some big stories. Greg Jennings and Sean Merriman are back. Let's start in New England, where we'll see a battle of two of the best quarterbacks ever this Sunday, with Tom Brady and the Patriots playing host to Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Brady has been singing Rodgers' praises all week, and Rodgers responded in kind, acknowledging that Brady's 5 titles probably make him the GOAT. Yesterday, Bill Belichick was asked which QB was tougher to face.
I've never played against Tom Brady, so I'm glad he's our quarterback. He's a great quarterback. And he's, you know, he's won a lot of games for us, and hopefully he'll win a lot more. And we've won a lot of games because of him. But I've never played against Tom Brady, so it's a different context. I would say playing against Aaron Rodgers is very, very difficult. You know, he's as good as anybody that I've faced. And we faced a lot of good ones through the years, and that's not to take anything away from anybody else. I'm just saying the guy's a great player.
Listen, let's have a discussion about Brady and Rodgers, because I think clearly Rodgers is right. The 5 titles make this question somewhat mute.
Yeah.
So the question would be, is Bill Belichick responsible for the difference between Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers? I say no. I say he plays a role, but I don't say he's the primary reason. I think Rodgers has more talent, and I think sometimes talent can be a curse. I think the fact that Brady's an underdog story, a sixth-round pick, not as talented, had to work harder, had to be more focused, has a different spirit and energy and leadership style around him. I think that also separates Brady from Aaron Rodgers.
I say no as well. One, very unfair to all parties involved, especially Belichick and Brady, because it's impossible to separate the two. Remember who they both were. As you said, a sixth-rounder who couldn't even run the 40 at the combines. Y'all saw those videos, man. Didn't look like that guy was going to translate to anything, and he became Tom Brady, the GOAT. And Belichick, before Tom Brady, is his starting quarterback. Five of his first six seasons, losing season. As a head coach, he was a losing head coach, and Tom Brady was a sixth-round draft choice. And they became great at the same time. So you can't separate one from the other in that respect. I look at this and say simply, Aaron Rodgers has more tangibles, more measurable talent. And that's the way that we traditionally look at any prospect. How big are you? How fast are you? How strong are you? How far can you throw it? And then Tom Brady has all that stuff. No ruler for that. No tape measure for that. But whatever that is, those intangibles, it's off the charts, and until we are able to measure the immeasurable, we would never give him his proper respect, but certainly do not undermine his greatness by comparing him to those with less accolade and those who have more talent but not more accomplishment.
You know, it's hard for me to say because I don't want to be a Patriots hater. I mean, you know, you say something bad about the Patriots, everybody automatically assumes you're saying that Tom Brady isn't great. He is great. He'll go down to me as the best quarterback of all time when he retires, when he's done. When I lined up against Tom Brady, when I lined up against Aaron Rodgers, I wasn't worried just about Tom Brady. I was also worried about Bill Belichick, what he was going to do. You know, I was once told a long time ago that, you know, if you want to be a great defensive player, if you want to kind of be the man out there, you're going to have to start playing against these offensive coordinators and head coaches because these are the people that's going to go out and start creating havoc for you. All these teams that Tom Brady's had in the past and some of the ones of recent, Bill Belichick has implemented these guys in order to build and put people around them. Aaron Rodgers, what did Mike McCarthy do for him? Aaron Rodgers created these plays. Aaron Rodgers extended these plays downfield. Aaron Rodgers made magic happen. If you put in the two, and I know it's unfair because Brady does have the titles, and that's why I can't go with Tom Brady over Aaron Rodgers because he's had help. Aaron Rodgers hasn't. So I can't – it's unfair because people are always going to say that the rings matter more than anything else, but I can't see Tom Brady and
you think Rodgers has five rings if he's playing for Bill Belichick?
No doubt about it. I think that even the quote that Tom Brady said, if he played here, that he would have 7,000 yards. That was telling you right then and there, that, you know what, he's better than me. If he was here with this coach and this organization, he would be better. But, he hasn't had the help.
This is easy for me. Honestly, it really is. This is no disrespect to Tom Brady. I know how great he is, and he is the GOAT because of the five Super Bowls and all of the other things that he's done in his career. But when you look at his coach, he not only is his coach, he's made the personnel decisions. He's been the guy putting the pieces around him to make him better. On the other side, defensively, you look at Mike McCarthy, he's not making those type of decisions. He's not making personnel decisions, just coached his football team. And he hasn't been able to get that done. It hasn't equated to what they've been able to do, they being Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. When you look at those two, you can't say if one were gone, they would still have the same success. You can't say that. So for me, I look at Aaron Rodgers and I look and say, shoot, if Mike McCarthy was gone, would he have more success? Probably. So that's how I look at it. I mean, you put him with Bill Belichick and you're telling me Aaron Rodgers only has one?
It takes a different personality to deal with Bill Belichick in his way. So Aaron Rodgers' personality has to fit with Belichick.
I understand that, but I feel like, and maybe it doesn't mesh when he first took over. But if you were to ask him to swap right now, I think Aaron Rodgers has such a high respect and holds Belichick in such a high regard, he would do whatever that man asked him to do. Whatever.
But it's not fair to compare a full-grown Bill Belichick and his resume and accomplishments and then swap with Aaron Rodgers right now, because you wouldn't have done this puppy Bill Belichick. And that's my point. Day one Belichick and day one Brady, nobody's sitting there saying greatest coach of all time, greatest quarterback of all time. They built this together, and to take the hammer from one and the nails from the other, to me, is absurd, because as Whitlock said, we had to go through this together, and not everybody's down for that ride.
I totally agree with that. But my point is, if you have them together, you can't sit here and say, oh yeah, this is all Tom Brady. When we look at the Green Bay Packers, we ever say,
oh yeah,
Mike McCarthy we don't even consider that. Are you kidding me?
Our poor death.
Tell you how you really feel about Mike McCarthy.
No, I love Mike. I do.
You sure?
Did he retire you?
I do.
Did Mike McCarthy retire you?
Not at all.
Yes, he did.
It had nothing to do with Mike. It had nothing to do with you. But when it comes to coaching, I will never say Mike McCarthy is Bill Belichick.
Never.
No.
Oh, way to go on a limb there.
Hey,
drop the mic.
That's my point.
Yeah, but we
missed that part.
So you're saying if Belichick was able to have Aaron Rodgers, and I like the way Belichick did it, he's not going to give Tom too much credit either.
No.
I never played against Tom, and he never said, Tom is a great quarterback. Tom is the best quarterback playing in the game. But he mentioned that, yeah. Tom, Aaron Rodgers is one of the best quarterbacks playing the game.
All right, to a big story tonight, where Terrell Owens will receive his Hall of Fame ring at halftime of the Raiders 49ers game in Santa Clara. T.O.'s been venting his frustrations at the Hall ever since he didn't make it on the first ballot. And this summer, he became the first player ever to boycott his own induction ceremony, opting to hold his own ceremony in Tennessee instead. I have no faith the T.O. is going to behave properly or in a classy fashion tonight. He's going to do something tonight to show up the Hall of Fame and to put his little touch on this moment. I just don't have any it sounds like I'm just ripping T.O.
It does.
But I just don't. You got faith. He's going to do something tonight. He ain't going to just take his ring.
Well, look, I'm offended by the phrasing of the question that Whitlock obviously phrased.
Behave.
I mean, look.
No, I didn't say behave.
You just said behave. I heard that word. He won't behave.
Any chance he'll handle tonight's ceremony with class?
Depends on what you call class. Because guess what? I should have been in the first ballot Hall of Fame class.
Preach, as you say.
When you invite me, you invite my behavior. And guess what that is? I'm going to let y'all know. No, I don't know anybody else, someone help me, that has ever retired from the game top three by the numbers at their position and was not a first ballot
Hall of Famer. He made the Fantasy Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I can't talk to you right now. So look what happens. So guess what? I get it. This is as simple as it. And the Hall of Fame committee can do themselves a good deed by admitting this. T.O. sunned y'all when he was playing. Reporters, media, everybody out there. T.O. was like, y'all at my feet and my mercy. And then when y'all finally had the power, you sunned him back. Okay. Now T.O. is like, okay, invite me back. I'm gonna let everybody know why I'm disgruntled. And it won't be disruptive. It'll be honest, because I think T.O. is standing on the proper premise. Y'all playing shade. Y'all out here being petty with someone's status and accolade. I earned that. Don't take that away from me. And then don't add to my sunning by putting Randy Moss in there, who T.O. has some numbers better than and some not, but is right there in terms of historical record. And you put him in first ballot in T.O.'s
turn. T.O. beat Moss in drops, you're right.
Yeah, I'm just, for me and knowing T.O. and him calling him a friend, I hope he doesn't do anything, not just embarrass himself, but also his family and the people that's around, right? I think that we all forget, because he didn't go and stuff like that. And you've been. I've been to LaDainian Tomlinson's Hall of Fame.
Yep.
I went to Ray Lewis just recently. Hopefully, I go to Phillip Rivers and Antonio Gates. Those are my last two Hall of Fames. And one thing that's special about being there is they roll out the red carpet for your whole family, your friends, everybody. I mean, they eat free, drink free, do this free, roll, stay here. They take care of everybody, right? The last thing you want to do is do something that is going to put your family in a situation there to get ridiculed by other. Mind you, other people, fans are there.
Yep.
Dawkins, I mean, Philly rode deep
mm-hmm.
to this last. I mean, you would have thought this whole thing was about Philly. Every Philly fan was at the last Hall of Fame. They were there. You got to remember, if you do something that's going to embarrass your family and embarrass the people you came with and put them in a bad position to even answer questions or something happening to them, or verbally, or whatever might be the outcome, I don't believe that's going to be fair to them. You already made your point, mate. We get it. We understand you, just what you said. We all get it. You probably should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Probably.
He should have.
Certainly.
Right. He should have.
Probably.
The fact is, he already made his point. We get it. We understand. Do your thing, man. T.O. is a big figure. He's going to be a big figure for a long time, no matter what he does at this Hall of Fame. Just don't put everybody else in a situation to look bad.
I think he'll handle it just fine. I think what
has
been...
With class or just
with class. I think he'll be classy. And when you think about what he decided to do, honestly, it was in the best interest not only of the Hall of Fame, but in Terrell Owens. Terrell Owens, like, if he would have gone there and then done something that he could regret now and wish he had never done, it could change the whole outlay of everything. But when I listen to a Randy Moss afterwards, when they're on that desk and he's talking about what we need to do as the Hall is now open our arms and embrace him. And he has a friendship with T.O. Like, he understands how important this is to him and what it meant. I don't think T.O. now all of a sudden is gonna continue to strike that match and light that few. No, I don't think so.
He's gonna do something.
I hope.
Whitlock and Wiley here. Greg Jennings and Sean Merriman are back. Let's move to Charlotte, where Eric Reed has been busy since joining the Panthers back in September, getting into it with Malcolm Jenkins and calling the Eagles safety a sellout, and continuing his kneeling protest during the national anthem. While Ron Rivera has been supportive of Reed, the safety said his coach doesn't have a choice and talked about how much progress his efforts have made.
You can't put a number on empowerment, and that's what our goal is to do. You can't put a number on the number of people you educate. And raising awareness is hard to quantify, but we've seen it when we are in the community. When Colin and I go places, when people see him, it's unbelievable.
Eric, when you're kneeling and you're hearing the anthem, how would you characterize the emotion that you're feeling in that moment?
A lot of times it's anger. Knowing the context in which that song was written during the battle, knowing the verses that were omitted from that song was created talking about killing slaves. Just the history of my people, it all runs through my head. The videos that I've seen on social media the past 3 or 4 years, it lights a fire in me.
This is my problem with Eric Reed. Mm. We just heard clips and I've read the stories. And not one time did we hear anything about police brutality. And if you remember, allegedly, that's what this was all about. But since he's come back, it's been about picking a fight with Malcolm Jenkins. Now it's let me talk tough and Ron Rivera, it don't matter what you say, you have no choice. I never hear him talk about police brutality. And allegedly, that's what this is all about. And what I've said from the get-go, it's about building a brand and drawing attention to Eric Reed. That's what he's been about since he's rejoined the NFL. He's played some decent football, but he's also done a lot to, hey, look at me. When me and Kaepernick and over social media, this video and that video, never once do you hear him talking about police brutality. He's calling Malcolm. How does calling Malcolm Jenkins a sellout, how does that raise awareness, advance the cause? How does trying to bicker with your head coach and try to put him in some position like, I'm the tough guy, he has no choice. It's all a scam and a fraud. It's never been about what they say it's about. It's about he and Kaepernick's brand.
When I hear you speak, I feel a lot of those sentiments. I feel a lot of the elements you just laid out. And then I hear this voice from childhood, my grandmother taking us to church, and the pastor always saying, separate the message from the messenger, right? And in this case, in this moment, I'm trying to separate the character from the cause, because I am down for the cause. But I am not down for what Eric Reed is starting to present in form of character. And one is, what really disturbed me was calling Malcolm Jenkins a sellout. Now, you can disagree with Malcolm Jenkins and the way that he went about his business. And it actually was business, because it was $100 million that a lot of people can say they want, but a lot of people can't reach and find and get. And you can still be about the cause and have a supplement of $100 million to go towards the cause and continue the cause. But a sellout, because we all know what that feels like, that sting. I know I've been called one many a times when I got outside the box. What box was that? I didn't know I had to be in the box in the first place. You trying to tell me because I'm a black man, I can't have full expression? And I'm not even talking to non-blacks. I'm talking to my own people calling me a sellout because, oh, Marcellus, you want to act a certain way. You want to talk a certain way. You want to do a certain thing. And Malcolm Jenkins, I haven't seen yet him fully exposed as nothing near a sellout, let alone someone who is adversarial to the cause. For a guy who plays a team sport like football, Eric Reed needs to understand, and Malcolm Jenkins help him understand, that we are pulling in the same direction, just doing it different ways. The linemen have to do something different than the quarterback, who has to do something different than a receiver. But we still got to get in that end zone together, man. Respect.
Well said.
Respect, but show some well love. Said. More
so. You know, my biggest problem is, Eric Reed, you was on the street for a while. And you had a bunch of people pulling for you to get back in the NFL, myself included, for you to get back in the NFL in an organization or somebody to take a chance and say, you know what, we don't care what's going to happen from this or what people are going to say. We want you on this team. We want to show you our support. You're going out there and showing aggression for the same thing you're fighting against. But against the same people you're trying to get something done with. Against your own color and your own race. What are you doing? You're making everybody who supported you and trying to stand up for you and doing what they need to do in order for you to get back on the field, and you want to fight. So all these people that are saying these things about you being this and you being that, you going out there and trying to physically put your hands on a man for the same cause you fighting against for somebody else doing it to us. What are you showing? And it sucks for anybody. It's bad for anybody who's kind of backed him and saying, man, this needs to stop. We need to support this. We need to get him back in the organization. Why is he? He's top 10 safety in the league. Why isn't he on the team? Maybe that's why you wasn't on the team. But to begin with, maybe that's why our organization didn't want to, you know, step over the boundaries and accept some of this backlash that was coming. You shot your own self in the foot, and that's just not fair to anybody supporting the same cause. You going to do that and say, so other people can sit back and say, hey, this is why, right here, look at that.
You guys, all of you make great points, and I agree with everything that's been said. My issue with Eric Reed is not the cause, because I'm down for the cause, as you said, Marcellus, but when you talk about Ron Rivera, a guy who obviously helped bring you into this fold, I helped get you here, and you say, respectfully, he doesn't have a choice, you don't even need to say that. Like, don't, because now you're literally smacking the hand out of your face from the one who was extending his hand into your face. Like, that's basically what you just did. And then my other issue is attacking someone who is fighting, but fighting differently than you. We're in this, but I'm gonna approach it different. And now all of a sudden you got a problem with, that's the problem in the first place. When we fight for something, we always expect for everyone to fight the way we fight. That's not reality. What fires you up, the same reasons he was able to express that, what goes through your head when you hear that national anthem being played? Yeah, it fires you up. It anger boils up. That I don't feel that. I there are some things that I pull from that bother me, but it doesn't. Rage doesn't come out of me. But that doesn't mean I don't agree with the cause. That doesn't mean I'm not willing to fight.
And more importantly, so Ron Rivera was our defensive coordinator when I was down there with the Chargers. You know, he had also had a tough time finding a head coaching job for a very long time, and he was a great coach. So obviously he had a hand in you coming there. That is another direct slap in the face for doing something like this for a coach who was kind of, not the severity of it, but still the same kind of reason for not having a head coaching job, somebody
of course
who stood up for you, and you go and do that. It's just not fair to other people you put in a bad situation.
And Ron Rivera, a man of color. I mean, how exactly. few of us are in that position in the first place, and that's who you want to respectfully diss? Yep. Oh, that's messed up.
I just feel like he has a platform. He says he cares about police brutality and injustice. Talk about that.
Yeah.
And use your platform and spotlight to talk about that. I saw Malcolm Jenkins do it in his locker room. Those are the issues he's focusing on. But great job, guys. I'm Jason Whitlock. He's Marcellus Wiley. It's time to put on our thinking caps and pretend like Marcellus is smarter than the rest of us just because he went to an Ivy League school. Boom, Sean Merriman is back. I'm a journalist. We know that Marcellus went to Columbia. Put on our thinking caps. Darnell, bring out Marcellus's thinking cap. We're going to dive into some of the deeper issues of the day.
I need tea and crumpets next time.
I know we're starting with a little humor, but we're about to dive into a more serious subject.
Yes, we are.
Get your minds ready for that. All right, let's move to Sean Merriman's alma mater, the University of Maryland, where school president Wallace Lowe reversed course last night and fired head football coach DJ Durkin. The university's Board of Regents had initially decided to reinstate Durkin after an investigation of the program's culture following the death of offensive lineman Jordan McNair. That decision was met with fierce resistance, with some of Durkin's own players walking out on him during a meeting and the student body planning campus-wide protest. Even Governor Larry Hogan weighed in saying, quote, "I am deeply troubled by the lack of transparency from the Board of Regents and deeply concerned about how they could have possibly arrived at the decisions announced yesterday. I share the concerns of many Marylanders and believe they very strongly that more must be done to restore public trust." Maryland has made quite a mess here, but I'm not, and some people will say this is embarrassing what's happened. I'm not that person. I will not say that. I don't really care how you arrive at the right decision. If you arrive at the right decision, I'm going to give you credit. Maryland made a mistake, I think, with the initial reinstatement. They course corrected very quickly. I don't believe this is embarrassing for Maryland.
Agreed. It's not embarrassing. The end justifies the means. So how you got there, okay, that's secondary to your arrival at this place. And where they are right now highlights to me that they still don't know how to assess what a toxic culture looks like. I'll tell you why. Because culture is intangible. It's nothing you can really grab. You can see results from a culture, but you can't be in a culture and say, this is this type of culture. You can start to make some estimations, summations, but what you have to do is anticipate. What you have to do is see what these elements are that exist and know that your conditions before, you said they were toxic. You said you had a strength coach that obviously pushed the wrong buttons and pushed too hard, pushed too far. And then you had people who didn't respond appropriately in that moment of tragedy. And then you said after investigation, that you know what that culture looked like. You know what you want your culture to look like. And then made a step in that direction. And then you didn't anticipate what was coming back your direction, which is going to be the same elements that you need to assess if you know what a culture is supposed to look like. You have not cured your ills. You have now just addressed symptoms of backlash and criticism. But there will be a day going forward when you think you have the proper culture, but you just showed that you don't have foresight. You just showed you don't know what consequence really looks like. So if I'm a player on that campus, if I'm anyone surrounding that environment, I'm starting to say, do you know which way is up? Because it shouldn't take 24 hours for you to go and flip your decision when you should have anticipated this backlash in the first place and made the decision based on that.
You know, Whit, it may not be embarrassing for you, but it's embarrassing for me coming from PG County, Maryland. I grew up 20 minutes from the school. I committed to the University of Maryland as a junior. Grew up there, born and raised. I know the area quite well. It's a sticky situation because a young man had lost his life. So you kind of don't want to speak too much on the coach. You don't want to speak too much of the culture. I mean, first, you have to acknowledge that Jordan McNair lost his life. From the outside looking in and then really finding out what happened in the situation, immediately, anybody who had a hand in it, trainers, anybody who physically seen his kid's condition running up to a 106 degree fever or degree, whatever he had. He had, you know, temperature he had. Those people should immediately be gone right away. You saw it. You could have prevented it. This whole situation could have been preventable. Boom, that's done. You don't talk about it anymore. Then you run your investigation on the coach and the staff, the culture, and you see all these things going on. You made your decision. Before everything happened, you make your decision and you stick with it. Do not let the public or anyone else play a factor in what you have going on. If you don't know that bringing Coach DJ Durkin back in the building, that that's going to be a problem, I don't know what to tell you. We've seen it earlier this year with Urban Meyer. They made a decision. They brought him back. He's still getting backlash right now, but they already made a decision that this is our coach and we're moving forward with it. If you make the decision and you let this whole thing blow up in your face and you don't know this coming, it just shows that somebody mishandled this thing, not only from the start, but even when they had the chance to go back in it and look at it again and now make a decision. I'm from the area. I've watched them bring coaches in and out in the last few years. Randy Etzel and, you know, the coach, you know, they're bringing guys in and out, inside and out. You don't have any of the former players who went there when we won games that's from that Maryland, D.C., Virginia area, guys who know the area, been there, know the culture. You don't have them as involved anymore because you're making decisions with coaches and personnel going forward without having anybody involved. Look at all the great schools, Ohio State, Florida State, Florida. These guys all come back and be a part of their university and their schools because they're involved in what happens.
Do you agree with this decision to let DJ Durkin go, or are you disappointed by it?
I think that Durkin was a good coach going for the future for Maryland. I think he was a great recruiter. I think that he had a good energy about him originally coming there and being able to turn the program around. He wasn't good enough. He wasn't Urban Meyer status. If something like this could happen and them still move forward with him. If Urban Meyer was there and they had a chance to win a championship, this might be a total different conversation. We know the NFL, college, whoever, deal with more things with players, anybody else, off the field, troubles, whatever it is, if you can produce. If you can't produce, you're going to be out of there. So this thing not only was mismanaged and mishandled from the start, they went back in it and mishandled it again. Yeah. That's what the problem come in at.
That's my issue. Not the wins and losses, because there's a loss that you can never recover from, a loss of life. So it's not parallel, analogous to me with Urban Meyer per se. But I will go there to that mismanagement point. Ooh. Not only did they mismanage it in terms of response from the outside, but they mismanaged it internally. Think about it. The criticism, that avalanche that came in the 24 hours when they reinstated DJ Durkin was something you should have anticipated. But, you know, as we know, don't let your neighbors run your house. Like, if you say this is the way it's going to be,
that's it.
Everybody who comes in here is going to have to respect this or, okay, have your opinion on the outside.
Okay.
One, and here's the second point, then you give it to me, Whitlock. The Board of Regents is a 17-member board that is governed and appointed by the governor. The same governor in 24 hours who obviously was not on the same page with his Board of Regents, correct?
Yes.
So look at that internal mismanagement. You have a board that is hired by one individual who turns on that same board's decision within 24 hours.
Being very close to the Ball State program, I see that all the time. A board of trustees appointed by the governor not on the same page as the people on campus. That's commonplace. But however, Marcel, as a parent, and again, I just analogize the parent, I don't have a problem with Maryland making a mistake and then correcting. You never make a mistake with your child and then have to course correct very quickly. And again, that's something you're highly invested in. You and your wife give a lot of thought to, but you can still make mistakes. I just think when I look at what they couldn't anticipate, which became very clear, is just the dissension within their own program. Mm. You've got kids fighting with other kids as over this suspension. You've got a player that is talking about he was beaten up or got in a fight, lost the fight or whatever, because the players are fighting amongst themselves. And, Sean, that was my position yesterday, and I stand with it today. DJ Durkin, to me, we're letting him off the hook. We want to blame Maryland, the Board of Regents, blah, blah. DJ Durkin should have been smart enough as a coach to realize he wasn't in position to lead this team moving forward. he should have worked out a resignation, in my opinion.
I think so, too. And even going forward in his career, you know, if he get another coaching job somewhere else, if you go and handle this particular situation correctly, maybe it might not have that big of a punch down the road, but you didn't. If you don't think that after a kid losing his life, that you can walk back in that building and you had a hand or you could have prevented this or you could have went down to that strength conditioning coach after there were five or six or seven different complaints or went to one of your assistant coaches after there was complaints and you can walk back in that building after your brother, one of your teammates, a best friend, whatever, had passed away and you think you're going to walk back in that building and it's going to be okay, you have to make a decision right then and there what you're going to do.
And he did not handle it well. Thank you, Sean. All right, welcome back to the show, Whitlock and Wiley. We're joined now by five-time NBA All-Star Tim Hardaway. Tim, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right, let's start in Minnesota, where Jimmy Butler may have taken the night off, but Derrick Rose didn't, dropping a career-high 50 points in a win over the Jazz.
Wet.
Rose has fallen pretty far since his MVP year back in 2011, and he was emotional after his big night.
You and your career-high 50 points. What does it mean to you, Derek?
Man, everything, man. I worked my ass off, bro. I wouldn't have did this for the franchise, the organization, the fans, everybody, man. I wouldn't be able to play the way I play, man.
Wow, that was amazing last night. Mm. I don't know how I feel, though. I don't know. This is the fourth guy in 2 weeks of the NBA season that scored 50 points. The rules have changed. It's an easier offensive game for everybody, but particularly perimeter players. I'm not sure if Derrick Rose is all the way back, but he's certainly better than I ever expected him to be again.
Yeah, I'm gonna respect him for climbing that hill once again. And you talk about injuries and adversity. It's one thing to just climb the hill in the first place and become an MVP of a league, basketball especially. Every corner has a basketball court. Every kid is walking around with all this gear on, thinking they're going to be the next great. You became that. Stories of this guy in high school where NBA players used to drive and fly to play pickup games with him while he was in high school. I heard those stories. Amazing. He climbs that mountain, gets knocked back down, and he's trying to climb it again. And to accomplish that, a career high at this stage of his career, nothing but respect. I'm not going to give it to the rules. Because the people who have 50 points this year, their names are Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, Blake Griffin. So they're not letting everybody get 50 points. And obviously, he had one of those memorable nights.
I'm not giving it to the rules either. You know, it's real personal for me to see Derrick Rose. I'm from Chicago, south side of Chicago. He went to Simeon, one of my rival schools, when I played at Carver High School. So I know what type of hill he's been climbing up ever since he's been hurt and trying to get back to 100% and play at a high level like he used to. And just to see him go out there and just play for fun and enjoy himself and do it in a way that he know he can do it and he shows that he's 100%, that's great. And I talk to him a lot during off season when I see him and I, you know, make sure that his head is all right because he was at a stage like he didn't know whether he wanted to come back and play or whether he was going to retire. So, you know, he was at that stage where, you know, we was worried about him. We was definitely worried about him. So to see him go out there and score 50. So I'm not giving into the rules, but see him score 50, that's a remarkable triumph for him.
Jeff Teague didn't play last night. I'm wondering, Tim, do you believe, can Derrick Rose be 82-game starter or a regular starter in this league on a playoff-worthy team?
I think he can. I think, you know, they missed Jimmy Butler last night, Teague and Tyler's. You know, I think his confidence level is up now. He knows his body is stronger. He knows that he can go out there and help a team out. Yes, I think he could do it for 82 games. Starting point guard.
And that body heals before that mind. To go sixth gear is the toughest part. To trust yourself again, to do all the things he did in theatrics. That's why I give him so much props, man. That's
all right,
hard.
Let's move to the Warriors, who moved to 8-1 with a win over the Pelicans last night, thanks to another big game out of Steph Curry. The two-time MVP has at times taken a back seat since Kevin Durant arrived in Oakland. But with questions swirling this year about Durant's impending free agency, Curry has clearly been the top dog in Golden State and might actually be having his best season yet with career highs in points, shooting, three-pointers, and defensive rebounds. Tim, I told Marcellus this, I think, earlier in the week. The better Steph Curry plays, to me, the more likely it is Kevin Durant moves on. If Steph reemerges as the clear top dog, throwing this out to both of you, can Kevin Durant really stay there?
I think he can stay there. But, you know, Steph Curry has always been a top dog. Everybody just think that because KD is there, KD won two championships with them and MVP in the championship, that he's not, that Steph Curry is not the top dog. Steph Curry is still the
Why
top
do you say
dog
that?
Because he still runs the team. The team at times without Steph Curry is lost without him being on the floor. Even though they look for Kevin Durant to do a little bit more, Steph Curry, they still miss his leadership out there. They still miss his threat out there, and they still miss his charisma out there on the court too. As you saw, if they still need a basket, they still go to KD because he can deliver an easier shot. More
at
than
7 foot, yeah.
Yes, more than Steph Curry can. So I still think that Curry is the top dog. And the way free agency is today, who knows and how Kevin Durant's thinking is, but you gotta understand he wants to be the highest paid player and he wants to be the top, you know, like the highest paid player on his team. And you know, it go either way with the Warriors or he go somewhere else, but he wants to definitely be the highest paid player on his team.
Yeah, I mean, talk like that, Whitlock, like the better Steph is, the more Durant wants to dip and go away. That's what broke up Run DMC. Like, you know, seriously, like, oh man, you hear Run? DMC ain't getting no shine. Next thing you know, I'm 20 years away from that moment, still waiting on a comeback tour because you just gotta allow these two guys to play under Steph's umbrella, his mentality of selflessness. That's why it's his team. It's not so much just a production. We always look at this team and realize we don't see stars just get along like that. And they have this Voltron effect where everyone plugs in at the proper place. And you could talk about each one of them, and they all have their individual lane, and there's nothing to interrupt them going out there and getting their buckets. I got to respect that he's going to stay regardless of what Steph Curry does. And, or he's going to leave because he wants
not,
to get paid.
Yeah, why not stay and have a dynasty there for, you know, 4, 5, 6 more years? Because at this particular stage, if they healthy, can't nobody be.
I'm gonna tell you why. I'm gonna tell you why, Tim, because they made a movie called The King of New York. They've never made a movie called The King of San Francisco, The King of Oakland. And the New York Knicks are sitting out there, and if Kevin Durant ever wants to be in the same conversation with LeBron James, he needs his own team and a big platform like New York. Why wouldn't that be appealing to him?
I don't think so. His name is up there right now as 1-2, LeBron James or Kevin Durant.
Two. No, it's not 1-2.
Well, 1-2.
Okay.
Not 1-2.
I can agree with that.
Yeah.
Okay. But you got to also understand, if he goes to New York, it still will be the same way. LeBron will be number one. Kevin Durant will be number two. It doesn't make a difference.
But he would have a megaphone and a platform and could bring a star franchise since, what, 1973, a championship?
True.
You do that with that megaphone in New York and we the Mecca, we the best basketball place in the world, and you win there, Durant, that's how you start to trump a Lakers team that's still trying to figure it out. You don't think that will be the leapfrog number one?
I still think
until
LeBron retire or he, you know, something else happens. I still think LeBron is number one.
All right, we got to end on this note. You said Run DMC, and when you made that analogy, I think of EPMD.
Uh-huh.
Eric and Paris breaking up broke my heart. And when they got back together, it was never the same.
It was never the same,
see? You know it's my favorite segment because I got my Twitter off right here.
Look at him. Happy over
Marcel,
there.
What you mean?
I didn't do anything bad. Not last night.
All right, Darnell Smith, our social media manager's here. So walk us through these Twitter and Instagram streets.
I'm gonna try my best.
What's popping out there, Darnell?
Yeah. Oh, man, we're gonna start with the Browns interim head coach, Greg Williams. Williams is the best known for his role in Bounty Gate, but before that, he was the head coach of the Bills in the early 2000s. He told reporters that he's actually been offered 4 head coaching gigs since then without even needing an interview. Twitter is skeptical that a guy who went 17-31 during George W. Bush's first term has been offered jobs like this, leading NFL Network's Daniel Jeremiah to tweet, little known fact, Greg Williams doesn't trick or treat. Everyone just drops candy off at his house. Y'all okay with social media trolling Williams?
I love it, and it's necessary. This is so childish, man. This is like what we did in high school. Man, you know I kissed old girl. Everybody lying, exaggerating and all that other stuff. Yeah. What is he talking about, 4 jobs offered to him? And if that's true, the NFL does need to be blown up.
For real, right. Like all these retreads and dudes like that. Look, this is funny how you come back like that, appropriate, Halloween, all that love. Let me hijack this one real quick. That whole Bounty Gate thing, boy, the NFL and others, I don't think really wanted to know how many teams and individuals were really guilty of that. That was so league-wide, and in my world, we were all guilty of the same thing. I just didn't understand that one. So to damn the guy forever for that one, it looks bad, but it was commonplace. That's all I want to say.
Yeah, I dislike this more than the thing he got convicted of.
Thank you.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, I was scrolling on my Instagram last night and ran across Marcellus's video that he posted with this caption right here saying, watch LeBron take a quick glance to the left in the beginning. My boy K-Dub Live told me a while back that King James misses every single free throw when he does that. So, Whitlock, should the Lakers hire a guy Marcellus to help the LeBron's free throws?
You know what? When you first said this, I thought you were crazy. And then last night you were proven correct. Yeah, I think they do. LeBron does need to consult with you.
Yeah, man. I got to give my boy K-Dub love, man. He brought this up 2-3 years ago. He's like, man, watch him at the free throw line. And he's like, every time he does this little glance off, it's iffy at best. And he did it, and I'm sitting there laying in my bed. I'm chilling. I'm fat and full with my Halloween candy on my belly. I said, I got to film this for people because it comes true. Look, there are other times he's at the free throw line. He just looks around. And then everyone started to respond like, yo, he has horrible free throw form, something that's out of my conversation. But all that said, watch LeBron at the free throw line, man. Maybe that's the reason why not hitting the clutch ones.
Wonder if he's looking over at Maverick Carter. They trying to yell at him something. Stay focused, LeBron. All right, what's next?
I got a new script. Got a new script.
All right. So moving on to the Timberwolves. Minnesota unveiled their new Prince-themed City Edition uniforms today, showcasing a lot of purple in honor of the late singer. But the Nets aren't going to be outdone, showcasing their new Biggie-inspired City Edition unis to pay tribute to the Brooklyn rapper. Biggie versus Tupac has always been a debate online, but now this is taken to a whole nother level. So, Biggie uniforms or Prince uniforms? Which one y'all going with?
I'm going with Prince, and I love Biggie, but Prince is an immortal.
Are we going with the artist or are we going with the uniforms?
Right.
Because you got the both of them look a mess, but Brooklyn looks better. But I don't even understand why that's Prince other than it's purple. Okay, and? Like, you don't own the color. And how's that Biggie? Because of what? What part of that is Biggie?
I think the top of the jersey. You remember that Coogi sweater he's known for?
Oh, yeah.
I think that's
right
design right there.
Okay, a little bit of that, yeah. They both are suspect uniforms, but amazing artists.
That's last but not least, what's popping on FS1?
Yeah, man, so we got this short clip from Fair Game that's airing later on this afternoon. And Christine interviewed Rams D-tackle Michael Brockers and asked a question about former coach Jeff Fisher and current coach Sean McVay. Take a listen.
If Jeff Fisher was still the head coach today, what would your record be at the end of the season?
Man, I don't know, 7-9? That sucks. I love you, Fisher. I just want to let you know, thanks for the opportunity, but 7-9.
Wow.
Was that mean, or is he just keeping it real?
He's keeping it real, and it was mean. Yeah. There was a little I can't touch that one, but you know, his record speaks for itself.
Yeah.
He could have said that. But we'd probably be 7-9.
Yeah.
Wow.
Dave Chappelle said it, when keeping it real goes wrong. And that went wrong, brother, but he's keeping it 100, too. I think they would be just a normal, average team.
Hold. Let's deal with this in a more serious way. Jared Goff, Aaron Donald, Ndamukong Suh, Marcus Peters. They got everybody. They just traded for Dante Fowler, Brandon Cook. If he had all of that,
He had a lot of that before. And Jared Goff certainly wasn't unlocked. Todd Gurley regressed.
Rookie year.
Todd Gurley regressed from a great rookie year. You want to keep going? And Marcus Peters not playing so well right now, so I don't know if that's an addition or subtraction. He had a lot of those pieces. He drafted well. He just didn't get the most out of them. He wasn't the most creative mind offensively.
I'm sorry. I would give him 9-7.
Look at that. Ain't too much better. We so close to the playoffs. So close to the playoffs. Yeah, stop, man.
All right. Thank you, Darnell. All right, we'd like to welcome a new addition to our show today. Marcellus, I've been hyping him up. My Uncle Jimmy is finally here from Kansas City. I'm sorry, not Las Vegas.
All right, respect. Look at that. Look at Uncle Jimmy. Woo, he cleaned over there, and he got it tucked out.
He got it tucked out. Goddamn, it's about time, man. What's going on with you, man? I mean, come on, man. You got me sitting up here?
Look. It is about time. We've been promising it. What is this uniform you're wearing? What is this about?
I mean, I got jobs. I got money. You act like you the only one out here. You the only one under contract. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to get contracted, all right?
What job do you have that require?
Yeah, well, man, I'm doing an intramural tetherball game down at UCLA. And, you know.
That Foot Locker interview, you got that still. Hey, got that going.
Hey, you know some people?
I know somebody that could take care of that. What you got on?
Holler at your boy, man.
I know you got bills to pay, so we'll try to keep it tight.
And barbecue to order.
All right, what did you think, Uncle Jimmy, of our conversation earlier in the show about John Gruden?
Man, first of all, man, I want to say that what I took from it, you keep calling him John Gruden. We call him Johnny G. You understand what I'm saying? We call him Johnny G. See, you look. Can you stand up? No. No, that's not him.
Okay.
I'm talking about Johnny G. Johnny G looked at you straight in your face. Mm. Listen to me, Marcellus. He said,
I'm here.
He said, I ain't packing. I do got $100 million, though, but I ain't packing.
I ain't going nowhere.
And my phone's still blowing up. Tell me who winning right now.
Yeah, but the whole my phone blowing up, like she calling me, but you just never see us go out.
The man told you I ain't packing.
He ain't packing it in.
Yeah.
But he at some point, if he don't get it together, he will be packing.
Yeah. See,
everybody gets fired at some
point. That's it, right there. That's what he's talking about. Fake news. Fake news. That you saying that, man. Get out of here with that.
All right, hold on. Let's get to our approval ratings. First time we've done him on Gruden's, I think, since September. I have him all the way dropping to a 58. Previously, I had him at a total of 66. He is now a role player, borderline scout player. Job performance, I had him previously at a 21. Now it's down to 15. All-time greatness. I think I moved him up a little bit because I started thinking about that $100 million contract.
Yeah, about to
nobody
say.
Nobody forgetting that.
That ain't scout team.
Character, I'm keeping him at the same, but the authenticity, the Raiders. The Raiders.
Yeah.
No. Let Frank Caliendo do that. Yeah. That's inauthentic coming from Gruden, so I got him at a 9 for a total of 58.
Yeah, let characters do your character. Yes. Like, don't be the one out there doubling down on that. So I hear you, man. He's dropped for me tremendously as well. Coming off of that first game appearance against the Rams, I thought he had something there. Since then, look at the job performance, 9 from a 19. Used to respect you, brother. All-time greatness the same, because he's still the same coach in terms of historical record. Character the same. Same old dude who has his issues where players always chirp about him, talk bad. But authenticity, whoo, I thought you left that behind you, like in the booth and the whole scowl and the whole Chucky. Don't keep doing that. Like, go to something else instead of that. So, total of 50, man. Used to be 72.
This is amazing. I think this is maybe the first or second time you've actually had a lower score than me.
Yeah.
Am I starting to rub off on you?
That's the problem. Yep. I need to take a leave of absence. Uncle Jimmy, any work at Foot Locker? Because I need to get up out of here. But,
man, y'all joking. Y'all joking. Clock time's rolling. Come on, man.
We almost done. But anyway, where do you come down on John Gruden? Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Look at that picture right there. You know what that picture say? I got $100 million.
Cash rules.
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
Have you been watching him play and coach?
Wait, Hold on. $100 million.
Yeah,
dollars.
Yeah, with an I, 100.
Would you take the job for $100 million with?
Yes. I would take the job and I would play the role of Chucky. But I wouldn't play it as well.
But you know, with the Chucky doll, man, you notice the Chucky doll do kind of look like the Raiders all scarred up and whatnot.